Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
Hi, welcome to the Park Avenue Synagogue Parsha Podcast. This week we are beginning the book of Bamidbar, the book of Numbers. And as we begin this book, which Chancellor Eisen, who was our guest last week, writes that the book of Numbers is the welcome to the real world after the idealized and ordered version of things in Leviticus, that Numbers takes us into a messy reality. I think it's interesting that the messy reality begins the very, very first part of the very first chapter with God commanding Moses to take a census of the people. And God says to Moses that you shall take a census of the whole Israelite community by the clans of their ancestral houses, listing the names every male head by head. You and Aaron shall record them, their groups, from the age of 20 years up, all those in Israel who are able to bear arms. The rabbis have a number of different ideas about what's going on in this census, mostly about counting troops before the conquest of the land. But to try to go a little deeper into the census, in that spirit, I thought we would take a new tack this week. And instead of speaking to clergy, I thought we would speak to someone who actually knows what they're talking about. And to that end, I invited my little brother, Benny Witkowski, who is a PhD student in the Department of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin, studying local politics and partisan change. Benny, welcome to the Park Avenue Synagogue podcast.
Hi, Rabbi Witkowski. Thanks for having me on.
Do I have to call you Professor Witkowski if you're going to call me Rabbi? Is that how we do this?
I am not a professor, so no, you don't have to call me
All right, I'm Ethan and you're Benny. So Benny, first, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your area of study in sociology?
Of course. So I'm a sociology PhD student at the University of Wisconsin, and I study local politics primarily in small cities in Wisconsin. And I look at how conflict and inequality in local government and around local politics translates into partisan change at the state and national level. So primarily, for example, what I look at is how some of the places where President Trump did best in these small cities in Wisconsin are places that have been systematically underrepresented and underserved by local government for generations.
Wow. You're going to be high in demand for the next few months, I imagine. So Benny, as you've brought us right into the idea of the census, because you talk about people being underrepresented, and in my admittedly amateur understanding, that involves the national census. Is that right?
It does. It does. And I love the way that you talk in your introduction about how, you know, as soon as the real world begins, it gets messy for the Jews, right? So as soon as we get the laws, we get the Torah, and we have to begin this process of being a people, of wandering in the desert, that becomes more difficult than we expect it to be. And that we see that in this first census that that God commands the people to take. Because we see that in the American census as well, right? So as soon as the census is written into the Constitution, from the beginning of our country, we say we need to have this census, we need to have this process of counting people. But as soon as that happens, we have the recognition that we don't actually have, we don't have fully equal people, and we don't have a clean, concrete way of counting people. And so immediately, the census divides Americans into three and distinguishes between white citizens who are counted as full people, slaves who are counted as three-fifths of a person in the initial censuses, and then free Black people that are sort of in a limbo spot where they're counted in some respects and count and not counted in others. So the messiness of who we are and what it means to be a part of this people begins in the census right away and only gets more complicated from there.
Wow. So it sounds like some of the divisions of our society were cooked right into the census and the way that we began counting people. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We have this moment at the very beginning of our country where we start counting people and the divisions are apparent. And that we call it the three-fifths compromise. In that controversial passage where we say that free persons will be counted and three-fifths of enslaved people will be counted. And it's a compromise because the South, the slaveholding South, wanted that clause there, wanted slaves to be counted because they knew that there were more free white people in the North and they needed to balance political power. And in order to balance political power, slaves needed to count for something.
I did not know that. So then when we're talking about beginning to count the people in our Parsha, it's interesting that the beginning is that we're counting just the men and just the men of military age. So could I surmise from that what the Torah is saying, at least in this part, and I should note that there are two censuses that we actually, Benny and I before this did a whole dance on the plural of census. What did we come up to?
Censuses.
Okay. That there are two censuses that are taken in the Torah. But in this one, we're counting men of military age. So in fact, some of the rabbis say that the whole point of this census is to figure out how many fighting people we have. And it seems like the rabbis or the Torah is the same as our founders in that they're somewhat stacking or the numbers about what they are looking for specifically.
So it's interesting because there's a real tension in the census and the way the census is performed, because to some extent, you're exactly right, that what we're really doing is trying to count who's here as full members of our society. Who is here that's going to be paying taxes, that could be drafted, that could be voting, that could be doing all of these things that we think of as full membership in American society. On the other hand, we're actually doing exactly the opposite, because the census doesn't just count citizens. It doesn't just count men. It doesn't just count people of voting age. The goal of the census is actually to count every living human that is in the country at this time. And so that's where we do count undocumented people who are in the United States. We do count children. We do count prisoners. And each of those classes of people creates unique sort of challenges and problems for us in terms of how we take census data and use it for all of the things we need the census for. But we're actually very intentionally in this time not just counting men of military age. We're counting everyone who's in this country.
That's very interesting. And it should be noted that later, more people are counted by the end of the book of Numbers, though they are not at the beginning. And that I also want to point out, there's a great comment by one of our traditional commentaries that talk about the overrepresentation of the Levites in the first census, and then the underrepresentation of the Levites in the second census, which has echoes of what you're talking about a little bit as well. So Benny, let me take us back one step. Why do a census at all?
Yeah, so I don't know the history well enough to say, you know, like, why did the framers think it was so important to take a census? But I can tell you a little bit about why the census is so important to us today. So the thing I think we're most keenly aware of today is that the census is how we draw political boundaries. So we aim for there to be roughly equal populations of people in every congressional district, in every state legislative district, and even in every city council district. And so it's really important for us to know where people are living, in order to draw those boundaries. So that's one really clear reason why we need a census, because a couple of years from now, once we have all this data in, states and cities will sit down and they'll redraw all of their boundaries based on how people have moved over the last 10 years. But that's not the only thing we use the census for. We use it to determine what kinds of federal funds get distributed to different cities and different states, things like welfare funding, education funding, all of these different federal programs that are scaled to the number of people that are living in a particular school district, in a particular city, in a particular district, they get a certain amount of money. So that's why the census is so important and why it's so important for us to count everyone. And this is where some of the real anxiety that you're talking about undercounting comes in, because the people who are hardest to count, homeless people, undocumented people, low-income people, are also the people who are going to need those services the most. So if we don't conduct a census that is going to capture those people, we risk having a decade's worth of federal policy that isn't fine-tuned enough to reach the people who need it the most.
Now, I can only imagine the difficulty of doing a census in the United States. You know, we read in the Parsha the way that it was done. First of all, it was done by the heads of each tribe were responsible for counting the members of their own tribe. So I guess that would be sort of like saying to the governor of Wisconsin, count all the people in Wisconsin, and the governor of New York to count all the people in New York. And you'll have to tell me if that's how we do things. And then the other question that comes up, and it's actually unclear how it's done in this census, though in the other it is specific. The way that it's counted is by each person bringing a coin to the Mishkan or to the priest or to the temple, and that they are thus counted by the donation of a specific coin. So did the founders follow the Torah when they designed our census, or is that how we do it today?
So there's a lot of reasons why the 2020 census is particularly chaotic, but it was always going to be difficult. It was always going to be a new, challenging census, because this is the first year where we're saying, as many of you as possible, fill out the census online. So most of your congregants probably got a letter in the mail, a postcard in the mail with a code on it that said, go to the census website, type in this code, and fill out the form. And so that was the first step. The second step is they'll send a form to your house and you have to mail it back to them. And then the third step is they figure out where they are missing the most amount of people, and they send teams of people door to door to knock on people's doors and collect this information. And that's what's really at risk right now in the coronavirus pandemic, is that it's just not safe to send census workers door to door at the moment. So I think they had hoped to start door to door knocking this summer, and I think they're talking about delaying it and waiting for it to be safer. It's interesting the way you talk about in the Torah that it was family, heads of families, that were responsible for counting the census. The census is very much a federal project. It's the federal government's job to make it happen, to ensure that happens correctly. But local leaders have an incentive to make sure everyone's counted. Mayor de Blasio wants there to be as many New Yorkers as possible, so that when the census gets drawn up, when federal funds get dispersed based on how many people live in a city, New York City gets as many possible federal funds. So he has an incentive to make sure as much data is collected as possible from New Yorkers. And that's true of cities and towns and counties across the country. So it does, local governments, mayors, city councils become really important actors here as kind of messengers to people to make sure that they take their census, make sure that they fill it out so that everyone gets counted.
Wow, that is fascinating. Benny, I wonder if you could tell us anything about Jews in the United States census and how we fare or how it affects us.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So part of what happens with the census is we collect demographic data about people based on different categories. So we collect data about people's gender, we collect data about people's marital status, the number of children they have, and we collect pretty detailed data about people's race and ethnicity. But one of the things we don't actually ask about in the census or in almost any kind of federal report is religion. And this is a sort of core aspect of the First Amendment and of the freedom of religion in the United States, is that we don't want the government to be responsible for measuring religion, for determining who's Jewish and who's not, who's Christian and who's not. So the census doesn't actually provide you any kind of space to say that you're Jewish or to identify as a Jew. Race and the way the census has handled race is the best way for us to understand why this is a problem. This is one of the things I teach my freshmen in sociology every year, is about the kind of evolution of racial categories in the census, because this is how we kind of talk about the idea that race is socially constructed, is that there's no consistent way of asking about someone's race in the census. So we start from the revolution, we start from early on, the census is distinguishing between free people and enslaved people. And that's the racial distinction. It takes another 40 or 50 years before the census recognizes that there are Native Americans, that there's this other category of people who are neither sort of full free white citizens nor enslaved black people. There are Native Americans. And then that's the kind of the three-part racial question for a few generations until we get to the late 1800s and all of a sudden the United States is worried about Chinese people. The census category's evolution is very much tied to our political anxieties about kind of who is here and who do we need to understand where they're from and why they're here. And so all of a sudden in the 1880s, we start asking about Chinese people and then Japanese people and then Filipino people. And that kind of lasts for a little while. And then it's what's interesting that I always to point out to my students is the census doesn't ever ask about Mexican Americans, Latino Americans, people from Spanish-speaking countries until 1930. It asks about Mexican Americans for one census, and then Mexican Americans disappear from the census, and we don't ask anything about being Latino or Hispanic again until the 1960s. And so it's very clearly tied to kind of what is the U.S. grappling with right now and what is the U.S. anxious about right now. And the other thing that's important about that is who gets to make that decision. Up until the 1950s, the census taker that would go door to door would look at someone and say, I think you're Black, and write that on the form. Or I think you're Chinese, and write that on the form. And it's not until the 1950s, I believe, that people have the ability themselves to assert their own identity. Think about that in the context of whether or not you would identify as Jewish on the census. Do you want the U.S. government to be in the position of saying, you are a Jew and you are not? You are a Christian and you are not? Kind of very much core to our belief in religious freedom and our belief in the separation of church and state, that is not something that the government should be empowered to do or that the government should be collecting data on at all. And this becomes really, all of this long history that I'm telling you comes together in the most recent censuses, because we still don't have a way in the census to talk about people from the Middle East. We don't ask people if they're Muslim or not. We don't have Arab American or Middle Eastern American as a category in the census, that there's no clear way to measure that community. And in the last 20, 30 years, our kind of anxiety as a country to sort of understand where, kind of how many people from the Middle East are in this country, how many Muslims in this country has been really significant. And I think you can look at it from two sides, right? One side that would say, like, of course, the U.S. would want that information. And the other side that would say, of course, we want to protect people from having to give that information over to the government. And so it's a really, really tricky question. And so I bring all this up because I know I've talked to Jews, I've talked to rabbis before, who every 10 years get the census and are asked this question of what is your race? And the only option that they see there is white. And that feels really uncomfortable for a lot of Jews. I think particularly for older Jews that remember a time when Jews were not allowed into white spaces, when Jews were not fully seen as white, and they look at this form and they don't know what to put down. And so, first of all, the form is a two-part question. It says a race, and you're allowed to check white or Black or Asian. And then there's a fill in the blank question on there, which I don't think the fill in the blank question ends up getting used all that much because people can put in a lot of varying data there. And I think it's perfectly within your rights if you want to identify as white and then put the right Ashkenazi Jewish or Jewish American in there. I think that that makes perfect sense. But it is this moment of us having to decide, like, do we see ourselves as white today? And that's a really deep and difficult question for a lot of us to ask. If we think about one of the purposes of the census as making it possible for us to steer resources to the communities that need it the most, to underserved communities, underrepresented communities, minority communities, I think I would see it as pretty important for us to recognize that in this moment, in this time, we do have that privilege that comes along with being at least a generation or two into whiteness in the United States, and to own that in this moment so that our government can figure out how to identify and help those communities that need it the most.
One of our commentaries, Rabbeinu Bachya, points out that the word that is used here in the Torah to count the people is the word se'u, not the word that you might expect, which of poked or pakad, which means more literally to count. Se'u means to sort of lift up and to lift up a head. And Rabbeinu Bachya points out that the word actually means both to promote someone, to hold up their head, literally to promote them and give them more power or responsibility, whatever it is. But it also means to decapitate, to hold up their head for that purpose as well. And Rabbeinu Bachya writes, because he says, for the census, and he makes it moral. He says, if you're worthy, it will promote you. And if you're unworthy, it will decapitate you. But you have sort of elucidated for us, Benny, exactly what Bachya is talking about, or what the Torah is talking about by use of this word se'u, that it can have very real consequences, both in the positive and perhaps the negative. And there are reasons why we might want to use another phrase for elevating a head, stick our necks out. And there are reasons why we might not want to, both for us as the American Jewish community, but for many communities within this country. Benny, I want to thank you so much for being with us. And
Tell
our mother that I say hi, and we look forward to seeing you again on a podcast soon.
Of course.
All right, everyone, that wraps us up for another episode of the Park Avenue Synagogue Parsha podcast. Have a wonderful weekend and a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul.
Hallelujah.